Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for Wednesday, April 16th already. I'm Ray Graff. Say, are you looking to make some improvements around the house? Is it a dump? Does it need some work? Well, we got the guy for you. Today on the show, licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is ready to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, property management. He joins us every so often to offer his expertise. It's always a popular show, so call early, 800-348-2551. We will even play another exciting edition of Name That Tool, 800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today with our buddy Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. To join today's conversation, if you have a question about a home repair, 800-348-2551, or if, as we get to that point, you have a guess on Name That Tool, it's the same number, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, how are you?
Doing great, Ray. Thank you.
Really?
Yeah.
You're doing, doing great?
Yeah. Hey, it's been a tough couple of years for me. I've had a couple of health issues, and I've discussed with you, and every day is really, really good.
Well, that's great you're here. Most people who come in start out great, and then halfway through the show, they're not feeling so great. So, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, anything on your agenda you want to discuss before we get going? We have an email question here that's a little extensive.
Yes, and just before the show, I said, hey, Ray, I want to talk about this, and then I kind of waved my hands.
Oh, yeah,
you kind of knew what I was talking about in that. Like to talk about these unrehearsed.
So okay.
That's what we're going to
do. I love the spontaneity.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Great.
Yeah.
Keeps me
so
awake.
I thought about discussing how to hire a contractor, whether it's a large project or a small project. I touched on this on one show prior, but I think it's really important just to go through some of the things that you should do before you hire a contractor. One of the most important things to do is nail down a scope of work.
Yes.
I guess that's a good metaphor.
Most people don't do that right.
Right. And part of that is they don't think about it and or they don't know what to put down in a scope of work. Let's just take something like roofing. So your shingles are at the end of their lifespan, 20 or 30 years. By the way, that was one of my shorts that I put on.
I'm so sorry. They did not embed. I did put one of your long videos on the page for today, but for some reason, those shorts did not go.
Yeah. Now I got like 7,000 views in just,
really?
Just today.
Well, you won't get any more from this show.
The key is a short video. It's like a 20-second video.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to listen or look at a six-minute video, but for 20 seconds, they'll do that.
Okay.
Anyways, roofing. I put a couple of 20-second shorts on my YouTube channel about roofing. So take that, for example. You'd want to know the type of shingle
right.
that the contractor is going to use. You want to know how he's going to protect your property. For instance, shrubs, your old shingles have to come off. I'm just naming this off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. You know, are you going to put a tarp down? Any guarantee associated? And money down.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. Often in the residential world, contractors will want money down before they start a job. I've been in business forever. 30-some years, I never got a nickel down on any project I ever did. Most of the jobs were commercial and municipal, so they definitely don't give you money down.
Right.
But even on residential jobs, I just didn't think it was right to ask for money before I got to the job.
What about for materials and such?
Okay. When the materials come to the job site, I think the contractor is due a check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
But not before they come to the job site, because, you know, there's a risk there. And you've heard these stories of subcontractors. They'll get a down payment. You'll never see them again.
Yeah, and I know one from in my town where it was terrible, though. The woman got fleeced.
Yeah, it can happen. So in my opinion, and some contractors may not want to hear this, it's not necessary to have money down before they're on the site. Once they get on site and they have materials delivered, be ready to give them a check that day. Regarding payment terms, I would also suggest not to ever give a final payment until the contractor is 100% done and you've had a chance to look at the work, because, you know, I've seen this happen. Contractor's almost done and, you know, needs the money and only get another day or something. A nice relationship would be established between the contractor and the owner, and the owner says, "Oh, okay," and then it won't.
Contractor's
happen.
Gone. Yeah, yeah. Ghosted.
And it could be either ghosted, or misunderstanding about the last part of the job that is being good. I mean, contractors have a bad name, but I will tell you, contractors that have been in business for a long time are some of the best people you'll ever find walking the planet.
You know, it's the scary part. If you have a big job done, and for the most part you're satisfied, and then the next summer you never see their trucks around town, and then you say, "Oh my gosh, did I get fleeced by a fly by night?"
Well, that's a segue into another aspect of contractors. They're usually changing, they're often growing.
Yeah.
And what might be a good contractor for you and your residential project this year, they might have one or two or three people working for them. They've grown.
Yeah.
And they're on to bigger and better stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's one of the most difficult things, is to find the right contractor for your job. The ideal contractor, in my opinion, is a father-son situation, like a two-person crew.
Father has taught the son the ropes. And,
right. And there's enough experience there, and they're happy not growing. They're happy with what they have.
Yeah.
And it's tough to get those people, because often they're booked out for a long time.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. Now, during the pandemic and in the year or two post-pandemic, you know, there was a long waiting list to get most major jobs done or moderate jobs done. Has that eased up a little bit?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Really. I mean, I think it has to a certain degree, but again, you know, I'm thinking of fluctuations in the market, and also the region too. Right around where I live in Saratoga County, it's kind of hopping. But if you go further away, it's not so vibrant a market.
Okay, Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement. And before we play an edition of Name That Tool, let's read an email here. This came in earlier today. Actually, came in last night. From Rob: "I'll be constructing / widening a 4-foot by 8-foot addition to an existing deck attached to my house in the Lake George area. I will install 3 support posts at the ends of the 8-foot addition with 1 in between. I don't know what that I have the energy in me to dig and install 3 sonotube footings below the frost line for the support posts. Would it be sufficient to dig down 1 foot or so, fill and tamp the gravel, set a concrete deck block as a base for the post?" And that's from Rob.
Okay. Was that a deck or an addition?
I believe it's an addition to an existing deck.
Okay. All right, if a deck is attached to the house, the supports need to be below the frost line.
Okay.
If the deck is freestanding, then it doesn't need to be below the frost line. So you can just put a little pad, put the post down onto a pad right on top of the ground, and you don't need to be below the frost line.
Okay.
And the idea is, if it's attached to the frost line, the house is below the frost line, and if the rest of the columns of the deck are not below the frost line, they're going to go up and down with the frost.
And
the frost will raise the ground, you know, up to, you know, an inch or two each year, so, and that can mess up the structure. But if it's not attached to the house, and say there's a couple inch gap or an inch gap between the house and the deck, then all 4, 6, 8, however many columns or posts there are associated with the deck, they can go up and down independent.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, there is a caveat, and it ties into what my son-in-law suggested, which was to name something, bring to the attention, the public's attention, something that's commonly viewed but is not necessarily true.
Aha.
And he's a legitimate rocket scientist.
Really?
By the way, yeah.
Would he like to produce this program? He seems like he has ideas.
No, he's got great ideas. He's kind of a bashful introvert.
Okay.
I mean, very social guy.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah, doesn't.
It's all right. The money's not that great anyway. So
yeah, okay.
Stick with rocket science.
Yeah. All right. So regarding this this email you had, there is a caveat in the building code that says you need to be protected from frost. Typically, that's about 4 feet below grade, depending upon the geographic area where you live. But there is a footnote that says you can insulate the actual footing, protect it from frost.
With what?
With insulation, rigid insulation.
Okay.
Okay. And if you do that, you do not need to dig down 4 feet
Interesting.
Below
okay.
frost. And it's you have to read the footnotes in the building code to find that. But they defer to the American Society of Civil Engineering or some other engineering organization. And that's what's stated. Just have to protect it from frost, not necessarily be below the frost line.
Gotcha. Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement at 800-348-2551. All right, 1 minute before the break. Time to set up this edition of Name That Tool. And frankly, Darren, I have no idea what this thing is, but it fits in my hand. It weighs a lot. So this is brass, lead? What is this?
It's brass.
Brass. It's very heavy. Yep. I mean, is it solid brass?
It's solid except at the very end where it's missing a piece.
Okay, so this looks more or less, let's see, how can I describe it? More or less like an ice cream cone. And it's got a, where the ice cream would go, it's sort of got a top to it that actually looks, feels like it screws right out.
You can take
it's
it
threaded,
right
out.
Huh?
Yeah, right. Okay. And on top of that, on top of this threaded piece, there is a string. So it is a brass, heavy piece of metal in the shape of a ice cream cone. We're missing the tip here, but there should be one. And it's got a threaded top on it and a string attached to that. If you have a guess for today's Name That Tool, call us at 800-348-2551. It's Adventures in Radio today with Darren Tracy. This is the sort of excitement you can only get in public radio.
For WMC comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, working to help people conserve farmland and forests in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve working land for good forever. agstewardship.org. Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, announcing the new Flower and Arts Barn, featuring garden gifts, plants, handmade pottery, artisan crafts, and more. Balletflowers.com for details. And Capital Region Classical at Union College, presenting Britain's Kaleidoscope Chamber Collective in works of Korngold, Hahn, and Goliov, Sunday, April 27th, 4 p.m., CapitalRegionClassical.org.
John Scofield at Combo 66. I love that album. It's, I don't know, 5 or 6 years old now, and they played The Egg, this iteration of John Scofield's group, and it was phenomenal. So there we go. It's not a music show, but I do love the stuff. Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement. We have an edition of Name That Tool, and several people have emailed in. A couple of are correct, but I won't say it until we talk to people on the air. But I will acknowledge those people who are correct. Michael And David, you got it right. And we'll see how other people do, too. Joe is in Schenectady. Joe, you're on.
Yes, is it a plum bob?
Is it a plum
ding,
bob?
Ding, 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 ding.
You win absolutely nothing, Joe, but congratulations. Yes. That's it, man. All right, so
thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call.
That was too easy.
All right, so what is a plum bob? Okay. What does it do?
So when we were taking that break, it occurred to me, where did that originate from? So I just asked Google that. It originated from the Latin word plum bum.
Plum bum? P-L-U-M-B-U-M,
meaning lead. Historically, lead was the primary material used for the weighted bob at the end of the string, hence the connection. And then the word bob refers to the swinging or up and down motion of the weight, like a bobber. Plum bum.
All right, so Telesport got that one right. Michael got that one right. Who else got it right? Jim got it right. And another Michael got it right. And Dave, everybody got it right. You need to do better and make it more difficult, or I could go back to being a terrible communicator and not describe it very well. That's the other thing I could have done.
Well, I put a positive spin on it, and the quick guess was due to how well you described this.
Yeah,
device.
It's my fault, and I accept full blame for this travesty, as I do every day. Let's go to Sammy. Sammy, the game is over, but let's see what you got.
Yeah, Sammy's here. It's a plum bob, and it's the description that gave it away.
Darn it.
But I was on – it rang too many times, damn it.
Okay. All right. Well, we don't have to swear, but thank you very much. Do you want to say anything else?
I'm sorry.
Do you want to say anything else that doesn't involve swearing while you're on?
Oh, boy. great show.
Hey, man. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. I'm sorry. There, Cynthia wrote in. Alice wrote in. Eileen wrote in. Everybody got it right today. So good job, all of you. Terrible job, me. Medium job.
No, it was a great job.
Really?
That's why it ended so quickly.
All right.
Because you described it so well.
Can't you bring in a lathe or something? You know,
next time I'm on, I'll bring something more challenging to describe.
Good. You and the next host ought to have a great time with that. Let's go to Jenna in Slingerlands. Jenna, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
We bought an old house about a year and a half ago with an old barn, and there was signs of prior powder post beetle damage, but the inspector said nothing was active, and lo and behold, last June, guess what popped out of the walls?
Rats.
We have powder post beetles in our house, and we also found signs of it in the barn. What can we do, if anything?
Yeah, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. Other than check to see if the wood is structurally intact, and you can do that by using an ice pick or something sharp and poke into the wood, and if it's not aggressively damaged, then you're probably okay. But if the wood more or less disintegrates when you poke and prod on it, then you've got to make some structural repairs. But in terms of just getting rid of the critters or preventing them from being there in the first place, I'm not exactly sure. I have to take that one as a homework problem.
All right, Jenna.
Thank you so much.
The good news is Darren will be back, and he'll remember that when he's writing it down. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. And it's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. Let's go to Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I got a question.
Okay.
I have outside tiling, and I get mold when it's power washed.
Mold after it's power washed. Okay.
Yeah, but the problem is, my mother said you can paint over vinyl. Is that true?
Yeah, you can paint over vinyl. There's some prep that needs to be done. You want to be careful that you don't want to paint it with a darker color, because that can heat up more, and vinyl can warp over time if exposed to the sunset.
Now, what can I do about the mold, though?
No, regarding the mold, you hit it with a mildicide, wipe it off. I would probably just try doing that. Have you tried doing that yet?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
So rather than power washing.
Is there any solution for mold?
Yeah, yeah. You can go in any big box store, hardware store, and ask customer service for a mildicide or mold detergent to wash your siding. I would do that, and you could pressure wash it as well. Maybe hit it with the mildicide first, with as areas you can reach at least with a brush and a spray, and then you can power wash it.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Darren Tracy's our guest. While we're on the topic of cleaning things, we have an email from Tom. How to clean a cement porch. Had a contractor fill cracks and resurface a cement porch last year. I applied an acrylic sealer after it was done. Looks like someone stepped all over the porch wearing dirty shoes, as perhaps I applied the sealer without power washing or cleaning the cement. Any suggestions on how to make the cement porch look better?
Yeah, I've got some suggestions. I'd probably describe it as a patio versus a porch. Patio is typically on a slab that's probably on the ground. That's probably it. In my era when I was growing up, patios used to be more popular than decks. I'm not sure why decks became as popular as they were where the elevation presents itself. Okay, concrete. The key factor of coating concrete or repairing concrete is the prep work. Like a lot of things in construction and painting, but in concrete, the prep work. So you've got to make sure that the surface is clean, and you could pressure wash that. You could wire brush it. You could abrade it somehow. Get the concrete surface as clean as possible. And then I would use a cementitious type product. And you can apply that with a brush. There's several out there. I'm thinking of one, like one name brand, and we're not trying to sell this product, but the one name brand is ThuroSeal, but it's a masonry type paint. And if the prep has been done properly, it's a tenacious bond. So that's how I would take care of that product, and it comes in different colors.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Darren Tracy Day here on Vox Pop. And now to Cheshire. It's Jim's turn. Hello, Jim.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, pretty
good.
Thank
you for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
It's not really it's a strange question, I guess. I have a small project at my house, and I've had two supposedly reliable contractors come and look at the small project and scope it out and stuff, and they both said they would get back to me with estimates and stuff like that, but I never heard back from either one of them. And I just kind of know what should be my proper response.
All right, and thank you for not naming their names. Appreciate it very much. All right.
I would call back. Give them the benefit of the doubt. I'd call 2-3 times. I know that's frustrating. I know my brother had a problem recently with that happening to a contractor, and he kind of exploded on the contractor.
Oh.
And the contractor said, I'm sorry. I'm awake at 6 o'clock in the morning, out in the job until 10 o'clock at night, and he's got other priorities.
Yeah.
And it's tough being a contractor. So give them the benefit of the doubt. Suck it up and call them 2 or 3 times. And then if you don't hear back from them, you got to write it off and move along to someone else.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, is it a question? Jim said projects were pretty small. In my experience of owning a home, sometimes if the project's not quite big enough, contractors, I got some big projects on the line here, and there's more money to be made.
It's definitely. As I described in the beginning of the show, contractors grow, and they need to keep their employees busy.
Yeah.
And, it's what works for a handyman, single home improvement guy going over for an hour is not going to work, typically not going to work for a contractor with 6 employees or 16 employees. And I've been there. I started just by myself by default in the construction industry, like a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And worked by myself. And then I had another person that helped me. And then we had 2 more because I had too much work. And then we had you know, three crews, and we had a couple dozen employees, and the projects you take vary depending upon your crew size. Mm. So it's a never-ending battle finding the right contractors because, you know, they get old, they move on, they grow bigger, do something else. So smaller contractors come in and replenish them. So somebody it's a cycle, and somebody used 5 years ago might not be around for the project 5 years in the future. So you just have to keep up on it, keep asking, go to your more prominent building supply stores, ask around, look at your Stewart's, Cumberland Farms, Post-it, looking for work, that type.
Yeah.
Interview them, and I should talk about insurance a little bit sometime. I don't know if
I have a question about warranties. Now, this ties in. This is from Chris, an email. I heard you mention considerations needed for hiring a contractor for roofing. What kind of warranty can I ask for that covers workmanship and materials? I will never personally go up there to inspect the work. How do I protect myself from their mistakes that may not be evident for another two or more bad weather seasons?
That's a really good question.
Great question.
Yeah, it's a great question. Roofing is a good example because often it's not accessible. You know, there should be a drone business out there for people to go inspect roofs after they're done.
Interesting.
I know that we had our roof re-roofed on our home, or at least the part where there are not solar panels, a couple of years ago, and the shingles were like 20 years old, and it was time.
Yep.
And by the way, one of the shorts that you mentioned is about how long that you mentioned you couldn't get on the link is how long will my shingles last on my roof?
Yeah.
20 to 30 years, typically. The ones on my shop roof that illustrated in the video were 25 years old, and they look like they're 10 years old.
Wow.
So I'm going to get another 10 years out of those.
Amazing.
So in our home, there was a couple of shingles that weren't nailed down right. They were slipping. And it's like, you know, I wouldn't have known about it had I not gone up there and taken a look. So you got to be your own best advocate on a lot of this stuff. And typically, you'll see a problem within the first year, labor problem. And then after that, if there is a problem, it would happen within the first year. After that, it might be more difficult to get the roofing contractor back there. In terms of the shingles, manufacturers will warranty those, but it's on a sliding scale. So if they're 30-year shingles, you know, at year 25, you might get back just a very small, small fraction of what the shingles cost, and the big dollar amount is in the labor anyways.
Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement. 800-348-2551 is the number. Now, Andy in Goshen, Connecticut was waiting a long time, and then I went to go to that call, and he disappeared. But he's back now, so let's go now to Andy in Goshen. Go ahead.
Hey, I hung up on myself, but I'm back.
Fair enough. You're all right. Go ahead.
So, bought a second home in Vermont about 4 years ago, and we had a problem earlier this year when it got really cold, that one of the five zones in the house...
We lost you again, Andy. Are you there? Are you there, buddy?
And
hang on. Hey,
yeah,
Andy.
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
We lost a little of this, but we heard you say five zones in your house, and then you went dark.
Okay. Sorry. So one of the zones froze up when it got really cold this winter. That seemed to be the case, is because we had no heat in one of the zones. And then after the house warmed up a little bit, we had heat again. So the came out, and he told me that everything was fine. The circulator pump was fine. Everything was fine. And it seemed to be that one zone froze up. And when we had the antifreeze in the system tested, it was below a certain whatever they test for. So they're telling me what I need to do is have the entire system cleaned and flushed and have the antifreeze replenished. I got a quote from them for what to me seems like crazy money.
Crazy money. Okay.
Like $5,000.
Okay. Well, we don't know how big the system is, but you said five zones. I think you dropped out again, but Darren, maybe you can comment on that.
Okay, there is a lot of information there, to use the overused term in corporate world, a lot to unpack.
Yeah, and I think he's back. So we have a couple of minutes before the break. So you fellas, pick it up.
Okay, well, just for the listeners, Andy's talking about a zone. He's talking about a heating system in a home, and he's most probably talking about hot water heat. And as so you'll have different loops or circuits in the home, like your bedrooms. You might want that cooler, so that's on one zone. Downstairs room might be another zone. So it's five zones. That's quite a few.
Okay.
And there are a couple ways to control that, just for background information. One is with a circulator pump, an individual circulator pump for each zone. Another way to solve that problem is to have fewer circulator pumps, maybe one, and what's called zone valves that operate with an electric solenoid valve that open and close as heat is called for. So in that hot water looping system, in this northern climate, sometimes the pipes are filled with an antifreeze material, not water.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that if they're on an outside wall, tempers just get cold. If it's water, it could freeze at 32.
Okay. Yep.
And that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a story which I won't go into right now, other than to say that when we initially built our home, we had antifreeze put in, and it was flushed out through the pipes, and the heating contractor flushed it into the sump pump in the basement.
Ouch.
As he was flushing the water through to make sure he had enough antifreeze, the extra he put into the sump pump, well, that went right into our water table and into our well.
Ouch. Well, that's another story.
So it contaminated our well. If the water doesn't test up to, and you use a hygrometer to find out how cold the fluid in the piping can withstand before it freezes, then you got to flush it and put some more in. If particularly if it's a vacation home, because you'll tend to have the temperatures keep the temperatures lower if you're not there. And I would just caution you about keeping them too low, or something, a freeze up could happen. I heard a dollar figure when he broke up.
$5,000, I think he said.
That sounds like a lot of money to do that. The antifreeze is expensive. But it does sound like a lot of money for that.
All right, Andy, we got to let you go. We're overdue for a break. It's 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy joins us today. We'll check the email bag and get back to the phones in a moment. Gardening tomorrow on Vox Pop. Don't forget on Friday.
Oh, God.
The radio train wreck coming to you at 2 p.m. It'll be the live airing of the Teach Uncle Grumpy to Bake at Down at Terrapin Restaurant, which, you know, if you're a fan of disasters, I think you're going to want to tune in at 2 p.m. on Friday.
You might have fun doing that. You might surprise yourself.
I did it already. It's recorded.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And we did have fun.
Okay.
Whether that translates into radio,
we'll get you out in the construction site.
Oh, really? I'm going to go out there?
Get you laying some brick.
Okay, listen, you bring a cooler full of beers, and you hit a pile of bricks with a hammer, and I will drink beers, and that'll be a show.
Now,
all right?
After the job is done, not during or before.
That's the only way I'm going to get through it. Yeah. Here's an important one from James. Dear Darren, please help. My wife needs a new hair dryer, but her friends are warning her to watch out. Apparently, all hair dryer manufacturers these days make them to operate at 1,875 watts. One friend blew out the circuits in the house. Another almost caused a fire. I've been hearing that the typical home cannot handle 1,875 watts. Is this true? And if so, what fix can the average person make so that their home can handle the high wattage? As a side question, why do companies make hair dryers that are too powerful to be used? My frustrated, wet-haired wife wants to know, and that's from James.
Okay, that's a great question.
Drip dry, buddy. Drip dry.
Now, it gives me an opportunity to talk about Ohm's Law.
Okay.
Which is volt times amps equals watts.
Okay.
So if you do the math on that, I just did this, 1,875 watts divided by 120 volts gives you 15.6 amps.
Okay.
Okay. Many outlets in a home are rated at 15 amps. So that's over 15 amps, even though the wire might be rated for 20 amps. 12-gauge wire goes with 20-amp circuit. The outlet might not be rated for that. That's a lot of current. 1,875 watts is a lot of current for a hairdryer to draw. So I'm not sure why they're making them that, that powerful.
Even at low power setting, that's amazing.
Well, that just, when it's high and low, that's just the speed of the fan.
Okay, so,
you know, it sucks a little bit less, but I don't think the element is... Maybe it's one element heating up instead of two, depends upon the model. But
I seem to recall back in the old days, my mother had a blow dryer and it blew a tripped a circuit at one point.
You could be pulling 15 amps just out of that one circuit, and then somebody else is operates a toaster.
Right.
That may not be the greatest example because
air fryer kitchen is what did it to me, man.
Yeah, well, new construction kitchen outlets should all be on their own circuit, but it could be something else. Could be a TV on that same circuit, especially in an older house. So you're pulling even more current.
Yeah.
And that will trip the breaker.
Yep. Okay. And hopefully you have breakers.
Or a fuse. I mean, every home has.
Do a lot of people still use fuses?
There's some fuses out there in older construction, sure.
Darren Tracy's our guest today, 800-348-2551. Pamela writes in, when did bay windows become popular? I have an impression it became a thing in the later 1800s. I'm curious because I'm pretty sure the original part of my house is pre-Civil War, but an addition was added in the very late 1800s. My house is one of the few on my block that has bay windows in the front, and I'm wondering if that feature might have been added when the house was expanded.
Yeah, I don't know when that architectural feature was added or was popular. Late 1800s would be a good guess. I know a house I grew up in was late 1800s Italianate house, and it had a bay window. And I remember we'd put our Christmas tree in that bay window, and there was a built-up about 18 inches high that you could sit on. And the Christmas tree went on top of that. And as a little kid, I had so much fun going into that built-up. It had sliding doors. I think my dad made those sliding doors, so I'd crawl in there underneath the Christmas tree and come out the other side. So late 1800s, that's probably a good guess.
So, but that was not when you were born, right?
Not when I was born, okay. No. Almost that old.
Fair enough. Darren Tracy's our guest today. One more email, and then we'll go back to the phones here. Laura says, how do we get Darren Tracy's short video on scope of project when hiring a roofer? Don't see it on the website, not on Darren's YouTube channel. Got to tell you, Laura, I tried like the Dickens to get these two short videos to embed on the page. I have no problem embedding Darren's YouTube videos, but these just didn't go, and I have no idea why.
Okay, well, you can go to my YouTube channel and just type in the search bar, Darren Tracy Engineer. And all my videos will come up. I do not have anything there regarding tips for a scope of work. That's a good project. I will put a video together on that. Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to our phone lines, and we'll go to Dalton, Massachusetts. John, you're on with Darren Tracy.
Hey, Darren. Hey, Ray.
Hey.
I've got a question about a camp that we have in Vermont. A dozen years ago, I bought a prefab building, 14 by 28, and it has a loft. So the intention of this property is to be a camp. So over the years, I've insulated it. I've had it professionally wired. The plumbing is done. So my question is, finishing off the interior, I have floors, walls, and ceilings I want to finish off, and I don't know the proper sequence. Do I put the walls in first? I'm going to use shiplap for the walls and the ceiling. And I'm going to use a hardwood floor that's ready to go. You just lay it down and it's finished. So if I put the floor down first, I'm worried I might damage it by doing the other work. So the simple question is, what do I do first? Do I do the walls first or do the ceilings next, then the floors?
Ceilings, walls, and floors. Typically, floors are the last thing that you'll do with a construction project for the reason that you mentioned. Could be damaged during the work.
John.
Especially like if you have a sheetrock ceiling, you want to put the sheetrock up first and put the wall material up against that. So ceilings, walls, then floors.
Ceilings, walls, then floors. John, you want to follow up?
No, that's terrific. I was going to go with shiplap on the ceiling as well to have that kind of the unified look with the walls and the ceiling. Is that a good idea, or should I go with the sheetrock on the ceiling?
Personally, I think wood on the ceiling and wood on the walls is too much. I've built a lot of places, and I like the white look of the sheetrock ceiling. I think wood on, in the first house I built for our home, had wood on the ceiling and wood on the walls, and I just think it was too much. But again, that's a question of taste. Yep.
Okay, and final question, when I put the walls up, should I space out the first course and leave a gap for the flooring, or should I go right to the subfloor with the shiplap?
I would I'd probably go right to the floor. And when you do that, you want to caulk that joint so that you're helping seal, even before you put your shiplap on the inside. Whatever you have there should have a insulation or vapor barrier. You want to seal that up tight with caulking, because new construction, you want to have a good tight home. And then you put your first board on the bottom, and I'd caulk that again right to the floor. And
okay.
To your subfloor, rather, and then you put your flooring on top.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Darren Tracy, nice, great expectorations. Darren Tracy's our guest today. Let's go to Glens Falls. Martin, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a suggestion for the powder post beetles. I have a couple of log buildings in the woods here in the Adirondack Park, and I had a problem with them. And boric acid, you can get it by the pound in a powder. It's not a dangerous substance at all. I put it, because it was a larger project, I larger spray area, I used a garden sprayer. But boric acid powder mixed with water, and spray it on your logs or your beams, and it worked for me.
What do you think, Darren?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. During the break, I had actually made use of my time and was doing my homework on the air here. And and if you're using go ahead.
My suggestion would be to search boric acid treatment for powder post beetles, you know, to get to the proportion of powder to water and whatnot. But it's a rather innocuous liquid, and you don't have to suit up to spray it. It's no more noxious than like water with chlorine in it.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. If you could seal up the wood, that's what I'm reading. Why do we have a call-in program if you
that's
can look
fine.
These things
that's
up on
fine.
The internet?
Well, geez, I have to do something.
No, but to get
5 years to retire.
But to, you know, get some more nuance here. Spray, and also if you're using dry wood, kiln-dried wood to begin with, you shouldn't have a powder post beetle problem. It's when the wood is green or subjected to damp conditions,
okay.
Where you would find
that. Well, that I think was the problem here. But boric acid, water, spray it okay. on, and it'll help. Search that.
Thanks, man. I appreciate the call. Let's go to dear old Del Mar. Terry, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call.
You
My
bet.
Question, speaking of damp conditions, we have an older house new to us in Del Mar, and a sump pump that is currently just drains out into the side yard, which is not ideal, a hose running out. So I have a contractor telling me he can just tie that off into the outgoing sewer drain in the basement, and that'll take care of it. Is that an okay fix?
That's not an okay fix. That's against building code. And
what the if reason, the house the is already is, built?
Yeah, but the reason it's not okay is because that pipe goes into sewer systems, and sewer systems get overloaded, particularly in wet times.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have them overloaded any more than what they are already because they just open up the big valve and dump raw sewage out into the Hudson River.
Okay.
Or whatever is the closest river to your waste treatment plant. So it's not a good idea. Now, storm drain is something different. You could tie it into a storm drain. You wouldn't have a storm drain pipe exiting your home, though. And it's not a bad idea to have that water just discharging out away from your home.
Right.
I mean, it's better than having it in your home. If you can get it away from your home as far as possible down gradient, that would be good. You can even bury the hose a little bit and have just the ends exposed to daylight.
Yeah. Snake it over to the neighbor's lawn, Terry. No, don't do that. No, that's just a joke.
Okay, guys, thank you.
Yeah, yep. don't do that. All right, Darren.
That's good.
Trace is
I like
our
that. Guest. I like a little bit of humor here and there.
Well, you know, hopefully he won't take it seriously, and then we'll get sued. Yeah. Don't do that, Terry. All right, let's go to the Berkshires. Oh, I love the Berkshires. Marty, hello, Marty. You're on.
Hey, Ray. I love listening to you, no matter what show it is.
Thanks,
this
man.
Is one of the best. Always
appreciate it. What do you got?
Darren, yeah, here's a question. I have a vacation home, and it has a loft bedroom, and there's no way to keep that thing from being super hot, I don't think. So I asked different contractors. I have a through-the-wall air conditioner. But if I'm not there, and I get there, and it's been a warm couple of days, it could be 75, 80 degrees on the main level. And, of course, the basement is going to be cooler. It could be 98 degrees up there. Is yeah. there anything that you can think of to get that hot air out of there?
Yes, Marty. It reminds me of the top bunk in our old hunting camp. It's like the young kids got relegated to the top
right.
bunk where it was hotter
sweaty.
Than heck.
A
lot of vacation home calls here.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, yeah. It's nice if you have one. It's not nice if you have to maintain it.
Well, Marty does, and we're running out of time.
Yeah.
You better help him out.
All right. So what I would do is install a ceiling fan. If it's a gable or a cathedral ceiling in the shape of a inverted V or an A, it would have to have a longer extension rod so the blades don't hit the ceiling.
Yeah.
But that works well. Invest in a good quality ceiling fan with relatively long down rod, and that will push all the warm air down and crack your window.
Would that work in your situation, Marty?
I already have one. But if I'm not there, I have no way to get that stand on. If I'm not, maybe I could get another stand that might have some kind of remote type thing.
Yeah.
I'll bet they have networked
that.
Ones now. You could probably Bluetooth the thing or
definitely
IP address
something
the thing.
Like that.
Yeah. If it's important to you, then you could do that.
All right, man.
Okay.
Thanks
right.
a lot. Appreciate
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call very much. Laura says, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say regarding Marty's call, you wouldn't want to open up a hole in the roof to exhaust air. Putting a hole in the roof is not a good idea.
Never a good idea.
In my opinion, it's never ideal with a skylight. You could crank the skylight open and exhaust, but sooner or later, skylights leak.
Fair enough. All right. So Laura just wanted to thank you, and she looks forward to learning whatever short roofing contractor video you create. So you have those shorts on your website, on your YouTube page, right?
On the YouTube page, right.
So, Laura, what you want to do is go to our page today for the show, WAMC.org, and just look at today's Vox Pop. There will be a link to a longer video on Darren's page. It'll take you right to his YouTube page, and you'll find tons of stuff there. It's pretty great, actually.
And that YouTube video is about installing a vapor barrier in a basement, crawl space basement. It's a very good, thorough job.
All right. We have only about a minute to go, so let's go with a simple question. I hope. Lorraine and Millbrook, you have 22 seconds to ask the question.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. We have an old building on our property from the late 1700s, and our kitchen's on the ground floor, and upstairs we have a bathroom and bedroom, and all the walls and ceilings are plaster, and the ceiling in the bathroom over the tub has developed a crack, which we have patched just with tape to keep it from the whole thing from caving in. I've had several people come, and they want to do sheetrocking. We're almost... Is that okay, or can I hold out and try to find someone to do the plastering?
Okay, we're almost out of time here, so give it a shot.
I don't have a problem with sheetrocking over top of plaster. It, when you're all said and done, it looks the same historically, and I think it's even okay in terms of national parks as a adequate renovation for okay. National Register of Historic Places projects.
Lorraine, I'm sorry, but we'll have to leave it there. Appreciate it very much. Thanks to everybody who called in. Darren Tracy, once again, how do people find more about what it is you have done and the things you have, the
okay,
videos you have
YouTube,
made?
YouTube channel, search Darren Tracy Engineer. I do have a West Branch Inc. website and a West Branch Engineering website also. Although they are old, they still have some pretty good information on them.
Fair enough. Hey, man, we'll see you next time.
Okay, thank you.
Support comes from Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs. Enrollment open now for preschool through grade 8 with a curriculum designed for creative thought, discourse, human connections, and experiential learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org. At Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, spring color arriving daily. Early blooming perennials, flowering shrubs, fruit trees, pansies, violas. Or is it violas? No, violas is the musical instrument. Viola, fair enough. Wardsnursery.com. Well, I learned a lot about flowers, and I'll learn it tomorrow. It's the gardening show. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, Andrea Leong. That's her name. She screened the calls. I'll remember it one of these days. Oh, boy. See you tomorrow.